All right. So, your name, please.
It's Sally Keston, K-E-S-T-I-N.
And your occupation?
I am a reporter, a longtime investigative reporter, and just recently in the last 6 months, co-founder of Asheville Watchdog, avlwatchdog.org, which is a new nonprofit news site in Asheville that was founded by myself and several other veteran journalists who had all moved here to Asheville and wanted to see more in-depth kind of journalism in our community. And so we volunteer our time and expertise to write stories that you might not be able to find in other media outlets here.
That's awesome. That really is. Oh, and I have to say, I've loved everything you've done. It's awesome.
Good. Thanks. I'm so glad you're reading it. Yeah.
So you moved here. How long have you been in Asheville?
We bought a house here in 2016, and then we moved here in March of 2017. So about 3.5 years now that we've lived here full time.
Do you like it?
Love it. Cool. Yes. Love it. Love everything about it. The people, the pre-pandemic, all of the things that we could do outdoors, the food scene, the music scene. It's just a really funky, warm, welcoming place that feels like a much bigger city than it really is.
For sure. It is fun. All right. So how did this story come about? What really inspired you to write about it? And there was two of you that wrote about it, right?
There's two, and I'll explain how that works. But so this was around the time of, it was after the George Floyd murder, and after the protests had started, including here in Asheville, and there were nightly protests with Black Lives Matter. And, you know, of course, the issue is not just here in Asheville, but across the country, was really much broader than just that one horrific incident of police brutality. It was about, you know, the much larger issue of mistreatment of Black people by police that has been going on in this country for years. And really just kind of got a platform and a voice through this particular case. And I think it was sort of a culmination of a lot of other terrible cases of police brutality across the country. So what I was looking for, and this is how I always approach my journalism, is, you know, what can we do that would kind of a big picture look that really would show people, you know, you can say that Blacks are mistreated or disproportionately arrested or whatever, but, you know, I like to have data to actually show and display to people, you know, this is beyond, you can have a theoretical debate all day long about whether this is happening in your community, but you know, if you actually get the data and look at it and analyze it, you can really show the public, you know, here's what this looks like. Here's what discrimination looks like. And if you don't think it's real, just look at the numbers. And so that's what we're trying to do. And we discovered that Asheville Police has a data portal on their website, and they actually have quite a bit of data that they put out there that you don't even have to file a public records request for. So, you know, I discovered this arrest data that's just been sitting out there for anybody to download. It's a simple Excel spreadsheet that you can download. And it had all their arrests going back to 2012. So I got my old colleague from the Sun Sentinel, John Maines, who's a data journalist, and he recently retired too. He lives still in Fort Lauderdale, but I got him to help me do the data analysis part, and then we were just sort of off and running. We just decided to, you know, let's see what kind of things we can look at, what conclusions we can draw from this arrest data.
That's awesome. And what was his name again?
His name is John Maines. It's M-A-I-N-E-S.
Yes. Okay. That's awesome. Not really. I didn't know. That's how you, what's your background with journalism? Where is it? You said it's always been investigated.
Yeah, for the most part. I spent 30 years as a reporter in Florida, and right out of school from Northwestern, I graduated in 87 and got my first job at the Sarasota Herald Tribune. And then from there went to the Tampa Tribune, and then spent the last 20 years at the Sun Sentinel in Fort Lauderdale. So I was always a reporter, never an editor. Well, briefly an editor, but that was also kind of like a reporter editor job, but mostly a reporter. And I covered different beats in the beginning of my career. Social services, I kind of got into that pretty early on. And I always approached that beat as sort of from an investigative angle, like whatever, if there was a particular case of something happening, I would always look at, well, what does this illustrate? What, you know, is there a bigger problem here that this illustrates? So I always kind of approached my beat reporting that way. And then, you know, as a result, got a full-time job as an investigative reporter in Fort Lauderdale. So I did that for the last 20 years, and we had an investigations team at the paper. So we would do kind of, it was our responsibility to come up with the ideas of what we were going to investigate, and then we would you know, pick the best thing, and we would spend anywhere from like 3 months to over a year on each investigation, just doing nothing but that, and doing reporting and researching and writing and editing for all that time. So it was a, you know, big investment and commitment by the newspaper to devote that much, you know, of their resources to that kind of reporting. But, you know, it's just so important and so meaningful. It really allows you to expose huge problems and really dig deep and make change. I mean, we had all kinds of things happen as a result of our stories. We had laws passed. We had people that went to jail, people who got fired. I mean, you really have an opportunity to have an impact when you're able to do that kind of deep dive reporting.
Yes, and I guess it paid off for y'all. I mean, I read the story. I actually was there when you spoke at UNCA last year.
Oh, yeah, okay, about the speeding cops, yeah.
Yes. I mean, it was awesome, so it was really...
Thank you.
So what type of feedback did you and Ash... Well, obviously, since you've come up so quickly, what feedback have y'all been receiving from the community and...
You mean like in general about Asheville Watchdog?
Well, a little bit of both. I mean, because you guys are so new. I mean, I can't imagine, like, some people in Asheville are a little different.
You know, yeah. So I would say for the most part, I think the community really appreciates what we're doing. You know, they get that. You know, we don't have a motive here. We're not, there's no hidden agenda or angle, and we're not, you know, we're not a corporate owned newspaper like the local paper is here. We're not beholden to advertisers or to, you know, any partisan agenda. We're just, you know, a group of journalists who are literally, like, consider this our public service to Asheville, to just, you know, spend our time instead of, you know, we have a lot of our friends who are retirees, and they, you know, they do, there's a tremendous amount of volunteer opportunities in Asheville, and they do a lot for, you know, they go pack food at Mana, and they do things like that to volunteer. And so, you know, we've decided this is our volunteer work for the community, and it's been very rewarding, because, you know, there are a lot of people who just are like, wow, this is really, you know, really good in-depth quality journalism, and thank you guys for doing it. So that's all been good. I think that we have run into a little bit of an attitude that, you know, some people feel like we're all kind of transplants. You know, we all come from, you know, pretty much bigger cities. And I think some people resent that, you know, here are these big city journalists coming in trying to tell us what's wrong with our city and what do they know, you know. So there has been a little bit of that. And then we've, you know, I've done a few stories on the city, and this is one of them, on this, you know, exposing this kind of discrimination in their policing. And it's been interesting and frustrating at the lack of response that we've had. And, you know, I have sent out emails and put phone calls out every time I write about something involving the city to every city council member, all seven of them. And the last couple of stories, I've gotten one or two responses from the city councilmen. Only one of them or two of them have ever gotten on the phone to actually talk to me and give me an interview. The others just want to, you know, send an email and you know, not really subject themselves to questioning. So it's an interesting, and I don't know whether it's a result of this is how they are with the media in general here, that this is how they behave with the Citizen Times and WLOS and Mountain X, if this is just how they've sort of operate. But, you know, it's not typical where I come from. Politicians are supposed to be accountable to the public, and they're supposed to, you know, the media is the conduit for them to express what they think about things and how their views on important issues before the city. And that doesn't seem to happen here very much. So I'm hoping that, you know, in time we have an impact and can change that culture and hold elected officials more accountable to the people that put them there.
Well, actually, how long did it take you to complete this report? I guess you guys started not too long ago, so.
Yeah, that one, we've had a bunch of them since that aren't related to that topic, so I'm trying to think back on how long that one took us. I would say we worked on that probably 2 to 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, my old job where I would go in and work 50 hours a week, we're volunteers. So we work, you know, I wouldn't say it was 2 weeks of solid full-time reporting, but it did take a while. I mean, it took a long time to crunch all those numbers and, you know, and then you have to go out and find experts to weigh in. And I was lucky because I got this guy, Roy Austin, who was, you know, a really big deal in the federal government. And, you know, was head of the civil rights division at the U.S. Attorney's Office, and then was in the top criminal justice guy in the Obama administration. And it just worked out because my niece worked at the White House, and she, you know, I said, hey, I'm doing this story. Do you have any sources that might be willing to talk to me? So I never would have gotten that guy otherwise.
Yeah, that's awesome, honestly. That's awesome.
I know, she put me in touch with him. I'm like, all right, this is great. You know,
yeah.
This guy used to prosecute and go into cities and put police departments under federal jurisdiction because of discrimination. So, I mean, he knows exactly, you know, there's no better person to look at something and say whether there's a problem here. And he said, yeah, there's a big problem here in Asheville.
Yeah. Have you gotten anywhere with Chief Zach at all? Have you heard from him? I know you couldn't get the best comments from him.
I did another story after this where same again through this data portal, which is a gold mine if you're ever interested in it, but they had all the 911 calls up there too. So I decided to look at that to see, like, with the theory of, well, how do police really spend their time if you're talking about defunding and, you know, taking money out of the police budget or shifting responsibilities, it would help to know exactly how they're really spending their time. So you can identify, well, maybe this area could be moved over here. And he did talk to me he did not talk to me for that story. He talked to me about the arrests, and he seemed fairly open. It, you know, I mean, In his defense, the guy shows up on the job and 2 months later a pandemic hits, and then he's got, you know, nightly protests and now the defund the police, and you know, all these officers are quitting. So I mean, talk about stepping into a minefield.
Sure.
You know, I get that there's a lot on his plate, but it, you know, if he or the city manager or anybody did anything as a result of what we pointed out with this discrimination, I have no idea what that is. I emailed after the story came out, and I, you know, when's the next city council meeting? Because again, in my experience, you do something like this as a reporter and you point out a serious problem at the city level, at the city government level, you know, typically that would come up like at the next city council meeting. And, you know, the city manager would talk about it, or a council member or two would bring it up and say, hey, what are we going to do about this? And there wasn't nothing. No one brought it up. It wasn't discussed. So again, that's another, you know, indication to me that there's just not a lot of accountability here. At least at the city. I haven't done as much with the county to know, but that was very surprising and disappointing. And I honestly don't know if they're doing anything about this.
Oh, yeah, that's very disappointing, honestly. Well, that's really all I have. Do you have anything else you want to really say, put out there about the report?
I would say that when you look at arrest data that is so disproportionately high on, and we specifically looked at common crimes, common low-level offenses that are considered discretionary. So this is, you know, kind of up to the officer as to whether to file a charge like this, like disorderly conduct and resisting arrest. And to have those arrest rates be three times the population of the Black population here really shows that there's a problem. And the same with marijuana possession. We looked at that because, you know, the studies show there's really no difference in marijuana use between Blacks and whites. So the arrest rates ought to be about the same. And instead it was like 40% Black compared to 12% of the population. So there's, you know, there's clearly a problem here. And I think that, you know, when you hear by police departments, you know, oh, it's just a few bad apples. I think when you look at the arrest data like this and it shows a problem this wide, it's not a few bad apples. It's a culture problem. It is something that, you know, the folks that are out there saying this is, there's systemic racism, there is. That's what this data shows. And so you can't hide behind that, you know, well, it's just a couple of cops with a bad attitude, or you know, there's something else going on, and it's probably a combination of systemic or cultural racism, but it's also, you know, an over policing of the very poor areas with high concentrations of Blacks, public housing. You know, there's just definitely some change that needs to take place in how Asheville is approaching its policing and law enforcement of the whole community, but especially the Black community.
That's awesome. That's actually a really good point that I'm glad you brought up.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Sally. I really
You're welcome.
And I'll definitely keep you updated on when it's coming out and whatnot.
Yes, I would love to see it. That would be great. Let me know if I can help you with anything else.
I will, for sure. Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care.
You too.
Bye.